Welcome again to Grund Podcast, a show about game development, adventures, music, and everything in between. After a while, we are continuing, and this time around we have a not even a discussion, just a calm, quiet chat with Šarūnas Ledas, one of the leads in a studio named Tag of Joy, which released their own point-and-click adventure Crowns and Pawns about a month ago, I might say, yes. But they are experienced developers in a bigger scope of things, as the last game came after multiple mobile titles, and they also work as an outsourcing company, so there are many things done purely to keep studio running. So, full-blown professionals. So, you know the drill. Discord sounds. Go, go, go! Okay. Yeah, I'm already recording. So, thank you. Thank you for your time. And agreeing to have a half an hour chat with this. The smallest podcast in the world.
My pleasure.
For people who don't know, we are neighbors, actually. You are from Lithuania, I'm from Latvia, and we are Northern Europe countries, small ones. And my first question would be something along with within those lines. What is, Šarūnas, what is your background? Because in our countries, at least yet, you won't see people who have actually game dev education of some sort. Probably anybody who is older than 25-ish came to this industry somewhat, I want to say awkwardly maybe, but... Well, not in a regular ways. So what is your story?
Well, there is a lot of truth in what you said. So my background is when I started playing games on the PC when I was a teenager, we did that with my brother, who we actually founded the company with later on. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so we started playing games and a lot of adventure games specifically, and started thinking about how they are constructed and what you could do, maybe work in the industry or something like that. Of course, when we were, I don't know, 14, 16 years old. And... somehow we started learning those things. So my brother went to the technical side. I started with digital art at first. But I was kind of interested in programming as well. So I went to software engineering in university, which was actually not specifically for game dev or anything, but... there are quite a few subjects where you can just choose what you do there. Like, they give you a task and you can actually make a little game for that task or something like that. Like, for example, for a networking class, I made a game with networking. For we actually had a graphics programming class, so obviously I made a game for that one as well.
What's that? Graphics programming?
Graphics programming is, in my university, it was OpenGL programming, so low-level, like, graphics programming, where you actually write a lot of code to draw a cube on the screen.
Oh, that's boring.
Well, it's, you usually hope you won't use that a lot in your life anymore, but it's really good to learn like low-level programming and to understand how the GPU works and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So it was still a good learning experience. So I finished software engineering, and since I was still interested in digital art as well, right now I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. So I do some management, I do some art direction as well, I do some technical art or graphics programming if I have to, like writing shaders, making effects, like programmatic animations or stuff like that.
Oh, you mentioned shaders. I am so scared of them. All respect to you, sir.
They are like an interesting beast, I would say. It's really nice when you know them, because then you can make a game look unique. You can add like non-standard effects and stuff like that. So I like knowing them. And I like when someone in the team knows them, so I can give them like tasks where I ask them just make this look pretty or something like that.
Yeah, you know what is possible and what's not, and you can give the task that is relevant and possible.
Yes, that's true. So yeah, as I mentioned, I also do quite a lot, even though we're a pretty small team at Stag of Joy, but so everyone has to like be hands-on one way or another, and everybody has to know as many skills as possible. Of course, there are people that only do art or only do programming or like writing or stuff like that, but we usually try to involve them in different
to wear different some other hats for a change. Sure.
Yes. So for example, if a programmer knows some Blender, we give them some modeling, at least some technical-ish modeling. Or I don't know, if for example our writer knew some he directed the voices in Crowns and Pawns, so we actually asked him to cut all the audio files for the voices.
Oh.
He did that, so so we try to share the tasks and try to involve everything. So same here, I do quite a few tasks one day or another, but yeah, that's my background. So I don't have an education in game development specifically, but actually when I was still at school, I joined a game dev team of mostly German people, which were making a fan-made adventure game sequel called Broken Sword 2.5.
Oh.
So I was a big fan of Broken Sword back then and still am. And I really wanted to do something in the industry, even though it was a non-commercial project, but it was also, we had permission from the original creators of Broken Sword to actually make that game.
Yeah.
If we don't make any money, but we just make that game for, for the people. So that was fun, and I actually learned a lot. It took quite some time to finish that game because everybody was working for free on their spare time.
Yeah.
So I finished my school, I started university, learned there for a couple of years, and then we finished the game. But it was a really good learning experience as well, and combined with my university education and the subjects that I learned there. I think I had a pretty good understanding about game development. And then after finishing university, we founded our company.
Yeah, I actually, when I joined this space of the world called game dev, you were already around, as I remember, with Crowns and Pawns, exactly, in adventure.
When was that?
It was like 3-4 years ago, I don't
know. Oh yeah, we had already started.
Yeah, but at one point I looked you up and was pretty surprised that actually you have a lot of titles under the belt. It's mostly mobile ones, I think. But there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
10 years already. 10
Almost,
years?
Yes.
Yeah. So Okay, you said that you like the adventure games, but you made so much else. Is that a purely business or how does it sit together?
When we started 10 years ago, I don't know, probably the adventure genre was kind of on the lower side of popularity. I mean, it's still a niche now, but it kind of had a revival of some kind when indie developers started making adventure games. But back then, the mobile platform and mobile games were on a huge rise. Mm-hmm. And it was probably the main or the only platform where a small team could start, because PC was still dominated by big AAA companies or even bigger companies like, I don't know, Revolution Software, who are making Broken Sword. They're a company that existed for, I don't know, 30 years now. So PC and consoles were still dominated by bigger companies like that. So for us, it was only logical to go to mobile. And we were interested in experimenting, doing something innovative, something new. So we did a lot of augmented reality stuff as well. Our biggest title before Crowns and Pawns was actually called Monster Buster. And it was really similar to Pokemon Go, but it was contemplated and conceived much earlier than Pokemon Go. So it was a really experimental game. We learned a lot, we experimented a lot until we found the formula where you actually use a map, you go outside, you generate like portals around you where monsters are, and then you fight them and collect them and so on. So that was an interesting experience. And then Pokemon Go popularized the augmented reality gaming. So we were kind of happy, but kind of sad because we had a really big competition on the market. True. So we did that, and we actually did quite a lot of work for clients. So quite a lot of projects on our website are not our original games or projects, but a lot of them are for clients, which we also did to like raise money for our own games, but also to learn from bigger companies and to let us experiment again. So we made quite a few educational games because we're interested in like teaching and learning a bit.
It's a good pay as well.
Sorry?
And usually it's a good pay, you know.
It is, yeah, and as I mentioned, that allowed us to actually get the budgets for our own games. And then a few years later, we kind of decided that we need a new project for like our team. We need a new original title to make, and we thought, why not make an adventure game? That was around
2015-16. So far, 6-7 years?
Yes. So we conceived Crowns and Pawns back then. We didn't start very actively, so we made a very rough like proof of concept, and then went looking for funding and doing work for clients to get more money and so on and so on. And then in a few years, we started making it, doing it more actively, involving more people from the team into the project. And the last, I would say, 3 years were quite active in development. The ones before that were like on and off.
But could we say that basically it's your largest PC project?
Yes, it's actually our first PC project. Oh. So we wanted to move away from mobile mostly because it became this free-to-play game dominated market where a lot of traction is gained through buying ads, not like from actually making good games and reaching your community. And we kind of wanted to have that contact with the people, with the players, and also like go to the platform where actually people search for games that they like. So we moved to PC.
Sure. What you are using Unity, right?
Yes.
Yes. Maybe that was a question that leads nowhere. Sorry, excuse me, but I do things like that. I'm glad to hear that it was your first project, because you obviously had an experience in a mobile space, and probably you made games within Unity for a mobile as well. What did you call your biggest surprises and/or hurdles during this development? Not only technical, maybe. Whatever comes to your mind.
You mean specifically for PC? Or in general?
I am asking in general. I'm trying to distance mobile stuff a bit. And hitting my mic a bit as well.
Well, I mean, game development is tough in a way. It's really, really fun. It's because you do creative stuff, but it's also tough. So you always have to kind of manage a team of really different competences and different people, usually, or if it's just a couple of people on the team, then they have to know a lot of different stuff. So that's not easy for them as well. And it's in general, it's challenging. So you have to know art, you have to know animation, you have to know programming, you have to know like platform specific programming, because every platform has really different like approaches and specs and things like that. So for example, on mobile, when we started, memory was a really big issue. I don't know, maybe I wanna say it's 64 megabytes or maybe 128 megabytes of memory that you can load your game to. So it was really small. It was like a really, really old PC. So we learned to optimize games that way. We learned to make them smaller. We learned to make the memory footprint smaller. And then on PC, it's much easier, but there's also different things you have to have in mind, like different computers that can have different graphics processors.
Are you all local, actually?
Like, you mean from Lithuania?
Yeah.
Not all of us, most of us are from Lithuania, but for example, our composer who made the music for Crowns and Pawns, he's German. Mm-hmm. We also have a game designer who didn't work on Crowns and Pawns, but he works on other projects. He's also German. And I guess that's it. The others are probably Lithuanian.
Well, awesome. Then you can have corporate parties as well.
We do some summer partying and stuff like that, and release partying.
I lived in Lithuania. I know you do. Because that's my one of my main goals after releasing game is to be able to gather almost everybody together, because we don't have two people from one country here, so it's like that's a dream to make gathering.
That's true.
In mobile, obviously you publish your games yourself. Why I'm saying obviously, I don't know, but I presume that you publish your games yourself. I didn't see that. Maybe you already had a different publisher. But maybe not. But you have you are not publishing the game. You did not publish Crowns and Pawns yourselves.
No.
Was it a That publisher, was it a recent add-on? Or I'm mistaken? Or they were always there?
No, we didn't have them at the beginning, so we kind of developed a lot of the project ourselves. Mm-hmm. But we started looking for a publisher, I know, around in the middle of the development. It took us a bit. We had to go to events, we had to attend business meetings and stuff like that. And when the pandemic hit, it moved to online calls and things like that. So we met really interesting publishers. Not all of them publish adventure games. Some of them don't publish adventure games anymore.
Yeah, most.
So we met a lot of interesting potential partners until we found the one that we are happy with, and they are happy mm-hmm. with our project, and here we are. But actually, on mobile, we did self-publish our game before, but then we realized that the market changed so much there as well that you usually need a partner as well, like either a publisher who has the marketing budget and knowledge how to like reach the platform to be featured there or something like that, as well as, or like at least a user acquisition partner who can buy ads for you, because on mobile you won't make anything if you just make a good game. On PC you can actually, as I've mentioned before, you can reach the audience, you can attract them on social media, you can have a Discord community, and even if you don't do all of that, you can attract some people on Steam and other platforms.
In any case, like, you don't have to be so aggressive, because in mobile space, I presume there's just aggressivity that's backed with money.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's all fair and good, but we kind of like the PC market more in that way. But we still thought that we still need a partner. We're like not professional marketers or anything, so we do need someone who has more contacts, who has more experience with the publishing on the PC and consoles. And
so I understand you wanted the publisher for their knowledge, not for their funding. You needed a
Well, I can't say all the details from the contract because it's under NDA. Yeah. But mostly for us, probably the main, since, as I mentioned, we were quite far advanced with the project already, and we did receive some Creative Europe funding and some governmental funding because the game is based on history, on European history and
Ukrainian
history.
I have a question about that as well.
So we did receive, it didn't cover all of the expenses, far from it, but we did receive some funding like that. And then, as I mentioned before, we had some work for clients, so we collected money there. And since we found the publisher quite far in the process, our main goal was actually to find a partner that can like popularize the game.
Yeah, I totally understand you. And that's awesome, because this is an area. If you better have people who actually live there, like. Doing this marketing stuff and all this, because if you want to be knowledgeable in this one, you just don't have time for anything else, I think.
Or like half your team will be marketing people.
Yeah, who needs that? That's boring. I saw on your website that Lithuanian Council for Culture also are mentioned as a supporters. And it's really, from my point of view, here sitting in Riga, it's been like for years and years, I see Lithuania is so much more advanced and open for new ideas or new avenues of, if we could call it culture than culture or anything new, because That's why I was really, really happy to see the Council for Culture also supports you, because, for example, I already told that sometime in the past that, for example, we have similar body here, and they said to me plain that games are not culture. Fuck off. So, awesome, awesome.
I mean, that's actually...
Not true.
That's really good that we have that, but we don't have a lot of that. Like, for example, I know Germany or Poland, they have priorities for games, funding games from the cultural or from the economy budgets. Because, well, games can be really cultural. They can also be very competitive on the market. Like, I mean, they can be hit successes and they can attract a lot of money from outside of the country, and we don't have a lot of that yet, so
we need our CD Projekt for that.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I guess you do need a success story like that, mm-hmm. to help you out, but we do have like just successful games. They're not that much related to culture, but they're really successful. And I guess if we're talking about exporting knowledge from a country, then games are a perfect medium to do that. So I would say that the governmental bodies here are not that much acquainted and knowledgeable about this sector yet, but they're getting better. And I'm personally part of the Lithuanian Game Developers Association, so we're doing a lot of like meetings and education about the game sector and
lobbying.
Lobbying basically. So actually we did meet with the Council for Culture, I don't know, maybe 8 years ago or so, and at first they said that games are not that much culture or anything, but we continued talking to them, we continued like teaching them about this sector, and it's also a creative industry, and the governmental bodies are starting to fund more and more creative industries. So we introduced them that, hey, this is a really good creative industry that gets a lot of money from other parts of the world.
So it's not just money on shooters.
It's not just money. Even shooters are really good export money. Like, yeah. It's really good export projects. You don't always have to export wood. You can export games. So,
or
you know.
Oil.
Or
gas.
Yeah, so if you have that. But if you don't have that, like us, we don't have a lot of, like, natural resources. So we have to export, like, technological resources, mm-hmm. or brain resources. So games are really a really good medium for that, and we did have to meet quite a lot of governmental bodies and people, and some of them are really like open-minded and they listen to us and they actually make a change, which is really nice.
That last one is important. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. I was actually when I was looking at your screenshots million years ago, I'm switching the themes now. I was really happy to see locations of Vilnius, and I have to say that I have not played yet the game. The question is more like you mentioned as well that it's kind of a bit educational game with educational bits. So, are you telling a story about Lithuania?
I mean, I wouldn't call the game educational per se. Like, we do have experience with educational games for like clients and stuff like that, but we really didn't want this one to look educational, so we actually put a lot of work to like not give the player too much information or text or stuff like that. So I guess that's partly because we had experience in education, but we kind of tried to not make it boring in that way. So it's primarily it's just entertainment, but there is there are some facts and there is some information about Lithuanian history and the Grand Duchy of Lithuania and actually Europe in general. So it's based on that. So
How would
it
you how would you without spoilers, of course, God forbid, what the story is about then?
Yeah, so the story starts with a girl named Milda, who grew up in Chicago, but her parents are from Lithuania, and she's just living her life. And one day she receives a letter which says that her grandfather died here in Lithuania, and she inherited his house. So she needs some money, so she decides, I'll go here and maybe sell the house or something, see if it's worth anything. So she comes to Lithuania and suddenly notices that someone is looking around the house, and there are like documents and notes and hints that the grandfather left her. So she starts connecting the dots and starts traveling through different historical places, looking around Vilnius and looking around other countries that I don't want to spoil.
Sure.
But she goes to various different locations, from churches to like museum-like locations, and tries to find the clues, tries to find information and objects, relics, and things like that. So in that sense, it's very similar to the Da Vinci Code or the Broken Sword series that I mentioned before, because it's based on real history and real places, but it also has some fictional facts and mystery involved in it. And then at the end of the game, maybe the main character finds something that the bad guys are also looking for, and maybe it's some kind of a powerful relic or something.
Bad guys are from Russia.
They're not actually from Russia. They're
I
I don't
said.
want to spoil much,
Okay,
but
well, I'll leave you with
they
that.
are related to the KGB, which
Yeah,
we
that's what I read
mentioned
somewhere, KGB, yeah.
on the page. But as you know, the KGB was like related to all post-Soviet countries,
Yeah.
so.
All right. So now you're out for 2 weeks. 2 weeks or three?
Today is a month.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, well.
It
I
was out on the
failed
6th
again.
of
No,
May.
congratulations on your first.
Thank you.
Okay, you have so many games, not your first. Anywho, obviously, you won't tell me, you can't tell me, and you probably don't want to tell me, or maybe really want to tell me, I have no idea. The question is, how the first month went for you, comparing to your expectations? Did you have realistic expectations?
That's actually a really good and correct question. And I can say that it went along with the expectations. It was almost like basically perfectly aligned with the expectations, but that's mostly because we kind of learned quite a lot about Steam and other platforms on the PC, and we knew the numbers that we had, like the wish list numbers and the community numbers and things like that. And then you can usually extrapolate how many people will buy the game.
And it actually worked for you, like
And it more or
before
less
your.
was pretty accurate. So yeah, so we kind of knew how much we will sell, and it went quite close to the expectations, and we are quite like really happy about that.
You are happy then. You can now buy beers.
We can now afford beers.
That's good. So I guess you will continue work on side projects, but Do you have anything new in mind already, like in this adventure genre, or because we don't really care about those mobile games, you know that.
Well, we are actually working on another PC game right now, like not very far in development, but we started recently, and we are working on a PC game, but it's not an adventure.
Uh-huh.
From the adventure games, we do have a couple of projects in mind. They're not announced and probably won't be very soon, but they are pretty exciting, and hopefully we can let people know maybe sometime this year, maybe early next year. But yeah, we don't want to move away from adventure games anymore. Like we have a technical base, we have the knowledge, we have the people can do that. So why not just continue making games like that? Especially since a lot of people are happy about Crowns and Pawns, and the critics are quite positive. Mm-hmm. It has a pretty high score on Metacritic, and it has a really high score on Steam. So that means that we probably did a pretty good job, and I guess people would be happy to play some more adventure games from us.
But what's that PC game that is not adventure? Or you can't tell me anything about that as well?
No, it's actually already on Steam. Like, it's not published on Steam, but it has a Steam page. It's called King of the Dwarves. So it's kind of a management slash simulation game where you dig dungeons and send dwarves to fight enemies and stuff like that. Well, it's completely different from adventure games, but it's still interesting, and it has some innovation in it. So it's interesting for us. But as I mentioned, it's one of the projects, but we do have adventure games up our sleeve already.
So we can surely say, I hope, that adventure games are not dead, and there is the market for them.
I mean, no, definitely not dead. I mean, it's a niche genre. We have to accept that. Yes, like, yes. 20 years ago it was, or 25 years ago, it was the biggest genre out there. Like, the biggest games that sold the most copies were actually adventure games. Right now, that's far from it, because the gaming market grew a lot. There's like billions of players in the world, like people just playing games on their phones or PC or whatever. But this genre didn't grow that much. It stayed almost like the same as it was 25 years ago. So it's much smaller than other genres, at least some of them. But it's there. There still are people that play these games. They are looking for those games on the market. Of course, it's competitive. There are quite a lot of indie developers that are making games like that. Usually not bigger companies, but mostly indie developers. And there's quite a lot of them. Not all of them are like very polished or anything, but there are quite a few good ones as well. But if you make a good game and you try to reach your community through social media and forums and Steam, you will have an audience. You will have people that will buy your game, definitely.
And what's good that I think that what's good about it, that when you have your first game out, and if it's not shit, then you actually have a really good background for your second game. In any case, you will have people come along with you.
That is very true, actually. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a challenge to like get the first game out and reach the players. If it's pretty good and it has a pretty good amount of players, I would hope and would guess that the second game, especially if it's in the same genre, I would hope that it's much easier to reach those players.
Right. So you have gone all this cycle. You began, developed, published. What would be your advice for small guys, maybe who have that one project What would be your advice in any area of life?
Well, I would probably have a billion of advices for them, but
you
I would
can
say
send
that...
me the list later.
Well, the main ones would probably be, well, from life in general, I would say that don't try to overwork and just crunch all the time. Like, you developing a game still takes at least a year, usually 2-3 years, and sometimes even longer. So it's impossible to work like 10 or 12 hours a day all of that time. So I would say just try to have life, try to make games like 8 hours a day or something like that. Have some spare time, go, I don't know, go out, play some music or paint or something. Do something else for a change, and don't try to just crunch through through the whole development. So that's one thing. The other thing is, especially for PC, I would say that if you have something to show, try to create a Steam page as early as possible, because it will take a couple of years to attract the players to get the wish lists, which, as I've mentioned, actually have a pretty big impact on how much you will sell when you release. So you need those wish lists. So you have to publish a Steam page. If you can make a demo, publish that one for free, and try to reach the audience. You won't be able to do that in the last month or two. I don't think anyone in the indie developer field can do that ever. If you're a AAA game, maybe you can just buy a lot of ads on Facebook and people will come. But if you're an indie developer, you will need to just be there on Steam for a while to actually get the wish lists. So that's probably my second main advice. And everything else, I guess, and every developer can do, because just make a game.
This is it. I hope you enjoyed it. I was on the slow side. I couldn't edit it to sound a bit more upbeat. Sorry. So that was our chat. Afterwards, since I have lived in there for 4 years, we had a couple words about Lithuania and Vilnius and places to do there. So yeah, stay tuned for the next episode. It will come way sooner than you might think. And you are very, very welcome to visit Grund.com for the links about our game, check out other episodes, maybe wishlist on Steam, and as always, send me an email with anything, not with anything, just regarding game or podcast. So yeah, see you bastards, bye.